This is special hurricane coverage from public radio stations around the state. I'm Frank Stacio. We're partnering with WHQR in Wilmington, WFAE in Charlotte, WFSS in Fayetteville, Blue Ridge Public Radio in Asheville, and WUNC in Chapel Hill. We're just about to go to Raleigh, where Governor Cooper is about to give us his latest briefing on the hurricane. We will also hear from experts around the state, reporters, and we're taking your phone calls as well. We want to know how you've weathered the storm, what experiences you've had. We're taking your calls, emails, and tweets, 877-962-9862, SOT@WUNC.org, #SOTLive. We're partnering with public radio stations around the state to take your phone calls and find the latest on Hurricane Florence, which, of course, has been downgraded. We're about to go to Raleigh now, where Governor Cooper is going to give us a news briefing, the latest from Raleigh. But first, let's see what's happening around the state. WUNC Managing Editor Dave DeWitt is with us. And Dave, I mean, the fact is that most of this hurricane and most of this storm has passed through the state, leaving an awful lot of rain, but that's still not good news. It means a lot of flooding in the Piedmont and in the mountains. And then, of course, all this water goes back down to the coast.
That's right. And, you know, the rain is just moving out of the state now, you know, in the mountains, as you just mentioned. But that doesn't end the storm's effects by a long shot. You know, the rivers all along the east and in the western mountains, you know, in the west especially, there's nowhere for the water to go. But, you know, causing landslides, causing those kinds of things. In the eastern part of the state, that water just comes up and over into all the tributaries, into the low-lying areas. And, of course, it affects homes. Sometimes often trailer parks or more low-income facilities. So the people who are affected the most tend to be the people who are most at risk in society in general. So, you know, if you look at sort of the numbers, it's a little bit overwhelming. The Neuse River, the Cape Fear River, especially Fayetteville, tomorrow through Fayetteville, tomorrow afternoon, they're expecting it to crest upwards of, you know, 15 or 18 feet above flood stage. Possibly historic levels. They've already done a lot of work in Fayetteville to get people out of harm's way.
And, of course, the other statistics and the numbers around this, the death toll, the latest I saw, stood at 17. Can you bring us up to date on that and about rescue operations around the state?
Yeah, we've just seen some numbers come in recently. 820 confirmed deaths across the Carolinas, most of those in North Carolina. You know, most tragically, last night, a one-year-old in Union County was swept away by floodwaters. When the car he was riding in attempted to drive through those floodwaters, they found his body this morning. Just tragic stories like that across the state. Those numbers are likely to rise as they're able to get into some of these areas that they haven't been able to get into for days. And they'll be able to, you know, get in and see who needs assistance, medical assistance right away. And probably that death toll will rise.
All right. And shelters around the state, to some extent, some of them are still filling up. People are still having to make their way out of affected areas and into shelters. What do we know about shelters in the state, Dave?
Well, the exact numbers are really hard to pin down because what's happening now is that North Carolina is closing down some shelters in different parts of the state, especially in some schools in Wake County. And then they're moving to places like Chapel Hill here at the Friday Center, where people have been streaming into that shelter all morning. Most of them are coming from other shelters because the roads are closed. And so they're unable to leave those shelters and get to anywhere near their homes or where they live. So they're all coming to this shelter, or they're coming to other large-scale shelters, some in Winston-Salem and across the state. So any shelters where there's been a school and that school has a chance to potentially reopen like it is in Wake County, they're moving people around from shelter to shelter. So, and as you mentioned, some of those folks are coming to a shelter just now from because of the floodwaters that are rising. They find themselves in a situation they've made it through the storm. They might think they're okay, but those floodwaters are coming their way, and so they've got to get out and get to a place that's safe.
All right. Dave DeWitt is the managing editor at radio station WUNC in Chapel Hill. Dave, we're going to check in with you throughout the next 2 hours. This is a two-hour special broadcast, a partnership of public radio stations across the state to bring you the latest on Hurricane Florence, which, of course, has been downgraded, but no less dangerous, and the catastrophe and the damage caused by this storm still happening across the state. Take you to Raleigh now, where Governor Roy Cooper is going to give us the latest on the storm. Governor
Still
Cooper.
Still claiming lives and property. My most important message is first. For many parts of North Carolina, the danger is still immediate. Flood waters are rising as rivers crest, and they will for days. Now, I know people are eager to get back to work and back to school, and many of you are even seeing the sun for the first time in days. In western North Carolina, things are looking better as most of the rain has moved out and the risk of rock slides and mudslides has decreased. However, many roads, particularly in eastern North Carolina and the Sand Hills to Charlotte, remain extremely dangerous, and others are being added to the list. I urge you, if you don't have to drive, stay off the roads, particularly south of US 64. Don't drive around barricades. We're seeing this happen now, and the result is not good. Listen to evacuation orders. Be safe and wait this out. Here's some updates. As of this morning, North Carolina has 17 confirmed deaths due to this storm. We mourn the loss of each and every life, and our hearts go out to their friends and their family. We have more than 1,200 road closures, including 356 primary roads. Our major north-south connector, Interstate 95, and portions of Interstate 40 remain closed to traffic. As of this morning, a little more than 484,000 people in North Carolina don't have power. Even though the rain is moving away, the ground is saturated, and even small amount of rain can cause flash flooding. First responders have reported rescuing and evacuating over 2,600 people and over 300 animals from flooded areas so far, and rescues are ongoing. We have been able to get supplies through to many in need, including some communities that are surrounded by water. 23 truckloads of food, water, and supplies made it into Wilmington this morning, and other communities facing this are being addressed as well. We have requested, and FEMA has added, more counties to our major federal disaster declaration request: Bladen, Columbus, Cumberland, Duplin, Harnett, Lenoir, Jones, Robeson, Sampson, and Wayne counties have been added, for a total now of 18 counties. We've requested that Hoke and Scotland counties be added, and know that there will be more counties added. Right now, the Black, Little, Lumber, Cape Fear, and Neuse rivers are inundated with major flooding, and 13 more rivers are forecast to reach major or moderate flood stage. Please don't make yourself someone who needs to be rescued. And stay off the roads in much of the state, especially south of US 64 and east of Interstate 7374. Many roads in our state are still at risk of floods. Roads you think are safe can be washed away in a matter of minutes. And if you must drive, don't drive on flooded roads. Just a few inches of water can sweep your car away. And again, don't drive around barricades. Be alert for sudden flooding and be prepared to get to higher ground quickly. Pay close attention to flash flood warnings and follow local evacuation orders. I tell you, there are so many heroes throughout our state to thank this morning. The rescuers who are risking their lives to pull people from floodwaters, the law enforcement, firefighters, first responders who are working around the clock, the nurses, the doctors, the pilots, the utility workers, all the volunteers. From the people of North Carolina, I say thank you. We remain grateful to the volunteers who are providing safe shelter for the more than 14,000 evacuees in 110 shelter locations across the state right now. Kristen and I visited the new shelter at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill yesterday, and it was encouraging to see the resilience of the volunteers and the residents there. To the members of the media, I want to thank you for the work that you are doing in getting critical information out to people. We appreciate that. Please continue this message. We've been preparing for and living through Hurricane Florence for more than a week now, but this remains a significant disaster that affects much of our state. The next few days will be long ones as the flooding continues. Our emergency management experts and thousands of rescue and recovery personnel are on the job. This is what we prepared for. And we have new supplies and personnel coming in every hour. We, the people of North Carolina, will get through this. If you have an emergency, dial 911. For other help or resources or information that you might need, dial 211. Or for the deaf and hard of hearing, 888-892-1162 for those using video relay services. And I'm thankful for Monica McGee providing American Sign Language's interpretation. I'll now recognize Mike Sprayberry.
Governor Roy Cooper live in Raleigh with the latest briefing on conditions around the state as Florence continues to work its way across North Carolina. This is special hurricane coverage from public radio stations around the state. I'm Frank Stacio, taking your calls and questions about Hurricane Florence. 877-962-9862, SOT at WUNC.org, or hashtag SOT Live. That's SOT at WUNC.org is the email address. SOT Live is the hashtag. Right now, let's check in with the storm itself and find out where it is and what the conditions are. At the National Weather Service in Raleigh, meteorologist James Morrow joins us. James Morrow, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Frank.
Where is the storm now? Can you give us the current conditions and its location?
Yeah, so after days of it sitting just south of our area here in central North Carolina, we finally have some movement with this storm. And what's left of the center of Florence now is a tropical depression is actually sitting over the Ohio River Valley. So we have seen some northern momentum, but we're still seeing some lingering effects in the way of showers and certainly some heavy downpours that we saw across a greater triangle area this morning.
There were a few tornado warnings this morning. Will they continue in North Carolina?
We can't rule those out. However, the best tornado dynamics have kind of diminished here in the last 2 to 3 hours. So we will have some additional storms this afternoon to deal with, but the best tornado environment has kind of slipped to our north. So we should be relatively out of the woods when it comes to these quick spin-ups.
So then what we have to be concerned about is the amount of rain that has already fallen and making its way through the rivers and streams. And that we haven't yet felt the full effect of that. Rivers will continue to rise, so the danger remains with us. Is that right?
Yeah, you're exactly right. So now that the grounds are all saturated, any additional rainfall is going to cause additional ponding of water and flooding. Even if it was a quick, you know, quarter-inch downpour, you'll likely see some puddles and maybe even some flash flooding occur because of it. We just cannot handle any more water across the state. And the water that we do already have on the surface will all be kind of running into the rivers. And we're expecting a lot of these rivers to top out in moderate to major flood stage. So we're talking about days, if not weeks, of additional river flooding lying ahead for us.
All right. James Morrow is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Raleigh. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Sarah Kirby is with us now. She's a state program leader for family and consumer sciences and a professor at North Carolina State University. She's a cleanup expert and has lots of helpful information as we take your calls at 877-962-9862. We want to hear from you about your experiences or questions you may have. You can also send us an email at SOT at WUNC.org or hashtag SOT Live is the handle for Twitter. Sarah Kirby, welcome to this program. Good to have you here on this live coverage.
Thank you, Frank.
What should people, I mean, I know that right now people are kind of staying put mostly, and you heard the governor say it's still not safe to drive. In fact, it's going to get more dangerous before it gets less dangerous. But as people, some people may be returning to their homes, what are some of the things they may have to continue or think about in terms of preparation for the aftermath?
Yeah, well, I think probably the first thing they need to remember is that it will likely be a little bit overwhelming. If their home is flooded or if it's experienced any sort of damage, it can be a little overwhelming to see your home in a condition you're not expecting. And so sort of preparing yourself for what you might see, also what you might see in the community. Your home may be fine, but we all know that our home is greater than just the one place where we live. It's our entire community, and to see structures or landscapes or devastation is a really hard thing for people to prepare for. So I think that's the first step. And then the second step is once you get there, thinking about what are you going to do if you do have damage? How are you going to start thinking about making a plan for cleaning up, restoring, and that sort of thing? And that is another bit of an overwhelming task for many folks.
And, of course, the psychological impact. And we'll talk more about that as this special live coverage continues on this public radio station. We're going to take a look and talk with a public health and mental health official, someone who is an expert in that. We're taking phone calls and talking with reporters around the state, talking with FEMA and other experts to get a look at what Florence has done and continues to do. This special live coverage continues in a moment from these public radio stations. I'm Frank Stacio. Stay with us. This is special hurricane coverage from public radio stations around the state. WHQR in Wilmington, WFAE in Charlotte, WFSS in Fayetteville, Blue Ridge Public Radio in Asheville, and WUNC in Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacio. We are taking your calls and questions about Florence, keeping you up to date on the latest developments as well. We want to hear from you and talk about what you've experienced, or if you have questions about the storm and its aftermath, you can give us a call at 877-962-9862. We can also be reached by email at sot@wunc.org, and the hashtag SOTLive will get you to us by way of Twitter. We've been talking with Sarah Kirby, who is a state program leader for family and consumer sciences at North Carolina State. And I want to take a look now at some of the psychological impact from this storm. Lonnie Crum is with us. Lonnie is a licensed professional counselor and assistant professor in the College of Education at East Carolina University. And she joins us now from Greenville. Now, Lonnie, welcome.
Thanks for having me on, Frank.
Talk a little bit about what people can expect. You know, Sarah Kirby was just telling us about, you know, if you can get back to your home, things to think about. But I would think the psychological impact from a storm like this, and maybe particularly in rural areas, which is your specialty, is something that we have to consider. Tell us what we should be thinking about.
Right. And I think that I first want to say that I'm happy that you all actually considered the mental health and the psychological aspect of this, because what we know is before, during, and after natural disasters, people tend to experience fear, panic, anxiety, sadness, shock, and as Sarah said, a mere devastation from seeing the loss of loved ones, as the governor mentioned, homes, vehicles, property, pets, and other material and non-material matters. So those are some of the things that people are experiencing right now, and how to prioritize that, they don't know, particularly for our rural areas and where access is an issue, where we have to travel more. There aren't usually shelters that are just particularly open for these things, and the shelters don't hold many. So a lot of shelters have to be created, as you've seen on the news, through schools opening, churches opening their doors for people to go. And people in rural areas tend to lack transportation. And so we're very thankful for the efforts from the National Guard that they're actually present in these areas. And they were present here before the storm even touched down to be able to reach out to the rural residents to provide them those services to help account for the access issues that we've been seeing.
And some of this has been going on. I mean, if you think about the effects of Hurricane Matthew as well, you know, after having been traumatized once and not really quite over it, this can be doubly devastating, I would think.
Particularly very, very unique situation that we have here. And as a therapist, of the clients that I've seen that are already still, they're still in trauma, still experiencing some PTSD, and that's post-traumatic stress, dealing with the loss from Hurricane Matthew, the houses and the loved ones, the communities, and this reoccurrent trauma. So even before, and even if they aren't, they did not lose or they weren't impacted by the current hurricane, that's that fear, that PTSD, that anxiety that they're overtaken by. So what we have to do as counselors is even check in with them to make sure that there's not this reoccurrent trauma happening with those particular residents in eastern North Carolina and even across the state where we have more flood-prone areas.
Well, I'm going to talk with someone now who is experiencing this even as we speak. Kirsten Crook is back with us. Kirsten was evacuated Boiling Spring Lakes to Atlanta, Georgia, because of Hurricane Florence, but of course has people back there and is in Atlanta now. We spoke with her on Friday, and she joins us again. Kirsten, welcome back.
Hi there.
Tell us what's going on in Atlanta for you now and what things are like for you as you wait out this storm.
Oh, well, it's just bated breath waiting game here. My house, I don't have any word on. My parents' house in Southport is being monitored by their neighbors, and they've got about an inch or two of water in the garage. But other than that, it seems like it's fine. My boyfriend's house in Leland seems like it's fine, but we don't know anything about what's going on with my house because all of my neighbors evacuated. We do know that the dam on the biggest lake at Boiling Spring Lakes breached either yesterday morning or the evening before. So
yeah.
There clearly was a lot of water there, and there are a lot of lakes there as well. So we'll see which ones held.
How are you staying in touch with people, and who are you communicating with?
Through cell phones, mostly. My boyfriend's tower went down he wasn't able to get any data on his phone, so he could make phone calls, but he couldn't see anything online. So I was helping update him a little bit just by reading the news here. But down in Southport, everyone still has cell data there. So
I wonder what it's like for you. I can hear the uncertainty and the hesitation in your voice being far away, being in a place like Atlanta and trying to monitor a situation like this over which you have absolutely no control. I mean, people who are there have no control, but you can't see it. What's it like for you to try to get information about the storm and, be in a place like Atlanta while this is happening?
I don't even know how to describe it. It's it's out of my hands, so I can't really worry about it too much because there's nothing I can do. But the threat isn't over yet. Things are still going on. Dams are still breaching. It's still raining in some places, and it's really scary. I'll give you that.
Well, I want to thank you for talking to us. Certainly our hearts go out for you. I hope everything turns out okay, but we're thinking about you, and we appreciate you talking with us. And I do hope things turn out well for you. Thank you so much again, Kirsten, for talking with us.
Thank you.
I want to go back to Lonnie Crum, who is at ECU, who is also a licensed professional counselor. You know, we talk about people in the storm having to deal with the aftermath, but what about people who have to go away and wait this out? I mean, what's it like? Is the treatment any different, or are we talking about the same kinds of psychological trauma for people who are away from the scene?
You know what? When a lot of people watch the news and they hear of the residents who choose not to evacuate versus those who do, a lot of the people wonder, why do people not leave? Some people have said that the anxiety of thinking what they have lost, like she just said, most of her community has evacuated, so now they're just sitting around playing the waiting game. And so some people feel like, I would rather be here to see the damage and experiences versus leave and wonder, will I have a home to come back to? So that's definitely an issue, and thanks, Frank, for bringing that up, that many people do sort of ponder in situations like that and why people choose to stay rather than leave. And what we also see is it could be an age-related concern as well. A lot of people who are elderly and a lot of older people like to stay and just ride it out because they feel more comfortable in their homes versus evacuating and placing their responsibility, the need to gather their medications up on loved ones. That's if they have loved ones to depend on or a place to go. So that's something that we do consider. And although we, no matter what, still urge them to evacuate, we ask them those questions. If they choose, if they're more resistant to staying back, tell us why. Help us to rationalize and think about, you know, the pros and cons, and hopefully it will ultimately lead in them leaving the area for their safety. But we do see that a lot of people who have left the area are often now in a place of uncertainty about their belongings and about their communities.
We are taking your phone calls at 877-962-9862. Take emails at sot@wunc.org or #SOTLive. To talk about your experiences here, we still have Sarah Kirby with us, who is a state program leader for family and consumer sciences at NC State, who can talk about some of the things that you might want to consider as you leave, if you're in the situation where you're still leaving, or when you return home, when that day finally comes. And Lonnie Crum has been talking with us, a licensed professional counselor, and talked about people who chose to stay. One of those people who chose to stay was Sarah Moore in Swansboro. We talked with her last week, and she joins us again now. Sarah Moore in Swansboro, how are things where you are, and welcome.
Hi. Everything is, the rains have cleared, the winds are simmering down, and we're starting to recover in the neighborhood.
What does your neighborhood look like? How about your house, and what's your situation now? Do you have power? Do you have food? What's happening with you?
Yes. Yesterday at about 6 o'clock, we got power restored. The families that were here, we all ran outside and yelled, "The power's on!" in celebration, and hurried up and shut all of our windows and turned the AC on. We've been helping out. My house fared fairly well. We did get some shingles ripped off. Pretty good leak going on, but with staying, my husband was able to get up there and mitigate the ceiling from falling in, because with all the water that was accumulated, it definitely would have. We got probably like a gallon and a half of water in all of our bowls and the pitchers we put up there. But other houses were not so lucky. There's a family two houses down from us who probably now have a ceiling collapsed in one of their kids' rooms.
And you happen to be on high ground because you're right out there where we might have expected you could have been practically underwater by now, but apparently you're on some high ground.
Yeah, and that was one of our reasons for staying. We looked at the flood charts, and we are on higher ground, and we are farther away from like the mouth of one of the creeks. So we were too worried about the flooding. We knew it could happen, but we weren't expecting anything to come in knee-high like people down the road had experienced.
Sarah Kirby at NC State, what about people who stay? I mean, at this point, they've been without power for a long time. I suppose they're thinking about the food in the refrigerator and freezer. They may or may not have enough power or a way even to cook that food. What do you do after a few days without power if you're in your house?
Absolutely. There are a number of things that can happen, and food obviously is your biggest concern. Not being a food safety specialist, I don't want to give too much advice in that area, but I will tell you that I do have a colleague at NC State, Dr. Ben Chapman, who is a food safety specialist, and he has put together a number of publications and things that you can access online at go.ncsu.edu/Florence Food Safety. I can tell you there are some things that we know you will not want to eat that have been in the refrigerator for quite some time. And those are things that are likely, obviously, to spoil. So things such as meats or poultry, you know, seafood, those kinds of things are things that once they've thawed, you don't want to go back if they've been in the freezer to try to eat those now. Things such as dairy products, milk and cream, and those kinds of things should not be eaten. Pre-cut vegetables, cooked vegetables, those things you would also want to avoid. There are some things, though, that's kind of interesting that actually do survive being without power for a while, and those are things that perhaps you hadn't thought of, and they might be things like hard cheeses or jams and jellies or your ketchup. I think for some reason it's always such a struggle at home to determine, do you throw the mustard out or do you throw the ketchup out? And it's amazing. There are a number of things that can actually stay. But for a complete list, you really want to go to go.ncsu.edu/Florence Food Safety, and you'll find everything you need to know about proper temperatures for cooking, what things need to be thrown out, what don't, things that have been in floodwaters, certainly we don't want to try eating, and when in doubt, throw it out. It's hard to do that because we know, especially in some of these communities, these folks are on really limited incomes, and replacing those items is expensive. But...
Well, and particularly when there's no place to go to replace it.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely. So it's very hard, and you feel for folks who are going through this. But we do want people to be safe and healthy. So.
Well, let's go to our phones now. The number to call with your stories or your questions, want to hear what's happening with you and give us an update and a sense of what's happening in your part of the state. This is a network of public radio stations now bringing you this live coverage. You want to find out what's happening at 877-962-9862 is the number to call. And on the line with us now is a caller from Fayetteville. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. You're on the line. Tell us about, you're in Fayetteville?
Yes. I'm a homeowner. I've lived in my home since 1988. And I'm in a situation where, first of all, I've never experienced a weather change of this magnitude in all the years that I've lived in Fayetteville. So our power went out at 2 o'clock on Friday. So it prevented me from doing anything as far as I had medication that had to be refrigerated, which I kind of remembered after the fact. So now it's destroyed, expensive medication. We are under Duke Energy for power. We learned yesterday that part of our subdivision has power, but I'm in the part that doesn't. So that doesn't feel too good. I was supposed to fly out Monday for a training and could not do it because of no power. Plus, the airport here was closed. And I was concerned about security for my home as well. So that's where I am.
Well, the situation right now is fluid, where things have more or less moved out, but that doesn't mean that the danger has ended. And, of course, we expect floodwaters to rise. So in your situation, then, what do you do about medicine? You said you had to throw it out. Were you able to?
Yeah. And I have left a voice message for Blue Cross Blue Shield so that I'm in their specialty pharmacy program so that I can reorder it. And they're very good at that. They would even overnight it, which I'm not going to let them do because I still have no power.
Right.
I will remember if we ever get into a situation again to have a cooler and some ice on standby.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks so much for your call.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That's a caller from Fayetteville. We're taking calls from all across the state today, 877-962-9862. Lonnie Crum at ECU, those medical concerns also add to all of the trauma and the difficulty of trying to weather a storm like this. What do people need to think about? Again, medicine that needs to be refrigerated, people who need to get to the hospital and can't get through the roads. Talk more about what happens on that side of the spectrum.
Particularly, as she said, thinking about what are your needs, that pre-planning, if any possible, reaching out, thinking about what medications you're on, because what I did even see in Greenville, a lot of the pharmacies were closed during starting of Friday of last week. And so people were really out of those resources. And particularly when we're thinking about the rural areas, having to travel outside maybe 30 or 40 minutes to get your medications. And so at this point, just mainly staying in contact with the Red Cross. with the United Way and anyone else that's readily able. And there, I have seen also in some of the local news stations, there are some emergency response lines just for these reasons. If people are running out of medications, essential medications that they need, they can call there and perhaps organize a way that these medications can be delivered. So there are some, I mean, we're not in a hopeless situation. There are some resources, but people have to be particularly a little bit creative in finding ways to meet their needs at this time.
Sarah Kirby?
Yeah, I wanted to ask Lonnie a question. One of the issues that has happened to a colleague of mine, she has parents that live in Morehead City. They did not evacuate, and they did not evacuate for specific reasons. Her father happens to have dementia, and it's very difficult to move individuals like that. And I know that folks with dementia have difficulty when routines are changed, and a lot of things happen, of course, during a hurricane or a disaster. And I don't know if she has any advice to help folks that are dealing with those kinds of things, where you've got an in-home patient that has some cognitive disabilities that might need help with.
Lonnie?
Well, definitely. I even heard a case this morning, because we do a lot of Red Cross response, and of someone who was not able to get their elder to agree to evacuate when a National Guard was knocking at their door. This has happened in Washington, North Carolina, and the National Guard said, okay, I'll give you an hour, and then I'll come back. And it really is difficult if you have certain conditions, not even with dementia, with autism spectrum, where people, you know, there's this social these social concerns of being around others and not wanting to break routine. And that's definitely something else to consider, because for their caretakers, that may drive up their anxiety and guide their decision-making. Should we leave or should we stay?
I'll tell you what, we're going to take that advice. We're going to take a break right now. I want to come back and follow up on that advice. Public radio station live coverage of Hurricane Florence continues in a moment. We'll be back with our guests and more advice and your phone calls at 877-962-9862. Our continuing coverage continues in a moment. This is special hurricane coverage from public radio stations around the state, WHQR in Wilmington, WFAE in Charlotte, WFSS in Fayetteville, Blue Ridge Public Radio in Asheville, and WUNC in Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacio in Durham. We're taking your calls and questions about Hurricane Florence and also keeping you up to date on the latest developments. Our phone number is 877-962-9862. You can reach us by email at sot@wunc.org, and hashtag SOTLive is the Twitter hashtag if you want to reach us by Twitter. We were talking with Lonnie Crum just before the break. She's a licensed professional counselor and assistant professor in the College of Education at East Carolina University. And Lonnie, you were talking about the special needs for not only people who may have to move with medical emergencies, but particularly if they have psychological or emotional difficulties, what that means for the caregiver now that they've been moved, their routine has been disrupted. Everybody along the line has to be understanding and cognizant of what's going to change now, right?
Right. And so we were talking about those who are caretakers, particularly for elderly persons who may experience dementia, any cognitive dysfunctioning, or that they may be more hesitant to move and to mobilize in a case of emergencies. And what I would advise is that communication and preparation is the key. When we see storms happening or we feel that immediate danger, just go ahead and explain to them things that are going to have to change. We're going to have to move. And this could work with even kids when the autism spectrum. We're going to have to go somewhere else. I want you to be okay with this, but it's necessary for our safety. So those are some of the things that the caretakers can do. And if you do have to seek shelter, either at a community shelter or at a hotel, go ahead and prepare. Let them know that you're bringing someone with special needs so they can make those accommodations. Maybe get you, if it's a community shelter, maybe place you in an area that's a little bit more spacious or isolated from the general population. But communication and preparation is very much the key in these type of circumstances. circumstances.
Well, the hurricane and its remnants have moved mostly through the state and out through the west, but there is still obviously lots of damage and devastation in the eastern part of the state. More than 450 residents had to be rescued in the city of New Bern, wedged between the Neuse and the Trent rivers. Of course, the town is about 30,000 people, had to rescue, as we say, about 450 residents over the weekend. And the mayor of New Bern joins us now. Mayor Dana Outlaw is on the program. Welcome.
Good to be with you.
Mayor Outlaw, tell us, give us an update on the situation. What's happening in New Bern right now?
Well, we still have some power out. We had 22,000 customers. All of them lost power. We now have everybody up but about 5,000 residents. We had over 1,200 residents in shelters, and they were five shelters throughout the county. We have 4,200 homes that are damaged, some extensively. We have 300 commercial buildings that are damaged. And so right now estimates are about $6 million.
Wow, $6 million and rising, I assume. What about recovery efforts? We know that New Bern was really, we were watching with our hearts in our throats as we watched flotillas try to rescue people from their homes. How is that situation now? Are the rescue efforts still underway?
Yes, but I want to say to all of your all the callers and people that are listening that I think we need to quit listening to what the category is. I don't know that in the category it says anything about storm surge. The Hurricane Hazel, 54, 1954, was a very small storm surge, but probably a Category 4 or 5. What happened in New Bern is originally it was going to be a Category 4 or 5, so everybody got their attention. And many residents evacuated. I asked them to go west of I-95. When the category went down to one, folks were like, well, you know, this is a little bit more than a tropical storm. I think maybe I want to evacuate. So let's don't spend too much time looking at the category. Like, you know, that's the biggie there. It's all about storm surge. This was 10 and a half feet. Hurricane Hazel was probably 2 or 3 feet and did all the damage. But this one was a 10 and a half foot surge. And the last time we had one of these was 1958 with Hurricane Ione.
Yeah, the storm surge and now the rains. And unfortunately, the rains that are being experienced in the western parts of the state are all going to come back to the eastern parts. So it really isn't over, even if it's been downgraded to a tropical storm. So I think you make a very good point. And I thank you so much for talking with us. The mayor of New Bern, Dana Outlaw, thanks so much for joining us. We're taking your phone calls this hour and next to talk about how you've experienced Florence. It's still waging a war in the state of North Carolina. And we're also, if you have any questions for us, Sarah Kirby is here, state program leader for Family and Consumer Services at NC State. Lonnie Crum is with us, a licensed professional counselor who teaches in the College of Education at East Carolina University. And we're taking your phone calls at 877-962-9862. We've got a call from Hickory. Nancy is on the line. Hello, Nancy.
Hi, Frank. Thanks for taking my call.
I understand that you were evacuated. Where were you living before you evacuated to Hickory?
My home is in River Bend, North Carolina, which is just outside of New Bern.
And what do you hear about what's going on there?
Well, I was lucky enough that a friend was able to make it back into the community, and they went to my townhouse and sent me a picture of the water line on the outside of my home, which was about 4 feet high.
Well, what are you hearing about the neighbors and the community? Do you have any sense of in the area where you lived, what's going on there and what's happening with the neighbors?
The majority of River Bend community did flood. I live in a fairly extensive townhouse community. Almost every unit flooded. I have friends in another townhouse community adjacent to us, and all of their homes also flooded.
What are your thoughts now? You know, I'm sure that you're very anxious to get back and try to get to see what's really going on there. But then you hear all these warnings, and they're certainly well-placed warnings, not to go back. It's not over yet. What are your thoughts now as you're waiting this out in Hickory?
I am actually, Frank, on the way back. And I have stopped on the side of the road, so I'm not driving and talking on my phone. I have brought supplies back with me from Hickory for myself as well as my friends. Cleaning materials, bleach, tools, non-perishable food, cases and cases and cases of water. And, you know, we have spoken by text. We have spoken by Twitter. We've spoken by phone. We're all in this together. You know, we're all going to help each other get through it.
All right. Well, Nancy, thank you so much. Nancy is on her way back from Hickory to near New Bern, River Bend. Thank you so much for joining us today.
And I would just say, if I could, the three things that I've learned from being in many hurricanes for people who are going through this is patience. You know, just try to have patience in whatever you're doing. A sense of humor can always help. And friendship, you know, listen to people, listen to your friends' stories, even if they're the same as yours. And make sure you're hugging them, you're thanking them, and, you know, you support each other. And it's tough, but you'll get through it.
Nancy, thank you so much for that.
All right.
Well,
thank you, and I appreciate all the information that you're giving all the listeners.
Well,
because it's important that everybody get, you know, support from friends and support from broadcasts like you.
Well, we are very grateful to you for your story. Thank you so much for joining us.
All right. Have a great day.
Thank you, Nancy. Good luck on the way home. Yeah, Sarah Kirby from NC State.
Yeah, so I thought it was interesting. Nancy's talking about, you know, helping each other out and being together during the cleanup. And I think Lonnie might be able to speak to this. But one of the things that Nancy said that I think is so important is it's not just the cleanup part that we have to deal with. It is those stories and processing those stories. And I, having been a volunteer before working after hurricanes and helping to clean up, sometimes the best thing a volunteer can do is to listen to that story, because I think people need to tell it in order to process it. And so I don't know if Lonnie wants to speak to that or not, but I think that's an important component of the sort of healing process.
Absolutely. When a caller was speaking, I really am glad that she talked about the positives. That, I mean, it's really, really hard to see the positivity in this, but community, that communal bonding, that support that we see among one another. Like she said, she's bringing supplies from Hickory back to River Bend. We have to look at those small things and be grateful for that at this time. I mean, just looking for the dependability on each other to pull through this situation no matter what is something that we can always rest assured of that we have, and that no one, not even the storm, can take away from one another.
Yeah, and it's also interesting to think about what Nancy was saying and what Sarah just pointed out, Lonnie, which is that if you're in a situation where you're a professional, you're giving help, right? You're giving aid. I mean, the thing is, you're really concentrating on getting those supplies. You know, if you're in a shelter somewhere and you're a registered nurse or some other kind of caregiver, you're trying to figure out where the refrigerator is. You're working out the logistics. You're in a strange place, and you're a pro. Sometimes it's hard when you're caught up in all those logistics and the people are still streaming in to realize that listening to the story might be the most important thing, because that's awfully time-consuming, and there's someone who needs a bandage over there, right?
Absolutely. Being supportive, listening to the story, what do they have, you know, versus and letting, like, the being patient, especially for the professional helpers out there, just being patient, not knowing how to communicate, not forcing them to communicate, but just let them tell you what they need is definitely what we all need to be doing at this time if we're offering help to those in recovery phases.
And then I would also say that those first responders have listened, and they too need care.
Yeah.
They bear other burdens, other people's burdens sometimes, and that can be overwhelming.
I'm going to talk to you more about that, Lonnie, in just a minute, but I'd like to get to Lumberton now in Robeson County. The water from the Lumber River has been flowing into neighborhoods and even over North Carolina 72, Highway 72. City is still rebuilding after Hurricane Matthew. Jay Price is WNC military reporter, and he is in Lumberton now. Hello, Jay Price.
Hey, Frank. How are you doing?
What I am doing okay, but I am in a very dry studio, and you are in Lumberton. What is the scene like on the ground there?
Well, it's finally stopped raining. I guess that's the headline here. You know, it's almost like all you can hope for down here. It was raining, you know, pretty heavily in bands until last night. The river, the Lumber River, peaked at pretty right out, essentially at record levels. And they had expected it to hold high like that for, you know, maybe as long as Saturday, Sunday, next weekend. But unexpectedly, it got unexpectedly high. Now it came down. They were telling me 3 feet today. So they're pretty cheerful about that, but that's as good as the good news gets. The flooding has hit a lot of the same neighborhoods that it hit during Matthew 2 years ago, and the damage then was substantial. You know, the state lists 876 homes with major to severe in that storm. And they had temporarily, a bunch of volunteers had put 5,000 sandbags together to kind of plug up a breach, kind of a natural breach where the railroad tracks ran under I-95, and that's where a lot of the flood water got in Austin. The sandbags and some contractors got in there and built that up the last few days, but that breached yesterday. So the flooding in some of the worst hit areas is back. And in addition, out in the county, the rural areas around here are patches of flooding where there wasn't flooding for that storm. Just large patches of flash floods that have hit whole neighborhoods. You know, it's almost impossible to move around the county without running into one every mile or two over the water, or, you know, some over the roads, or in some cases, you know, it's down to one lane pretty much everywhere you want to go. There's some place where it's kind of cut off, and you have to seesaw back and forth to get anywhere for miles and miles. The shelters, this is not a big place. The city has a little over 20,000 folks, and there are 1,600 in shelters, you know, something I guess right around 10% of the entire state's shelter population now, and that's increasing because some of the neighborhoods that are flooded, where it's kind of peaked out at maybe, let's say, 2-3 feet and haven't got into homes, the people are just sick of it. They've been there for days, and they're ready to get out. The ones who are going to tough it out are not toughing it out.
What kind of stories are you hearing from the shelters?
Well, I got into a shelter yesterday, talked to some folks, and, you know, I was kind of heartened to hear you've got a mental health expert who's come on today. Because that's one of the things that kind of echoes, you know, that's one of the reasons I'm down here, because this is a window into, oh, people who have seen this before. And, you know, so the damage gets layered, but the physical damage that they haven't even finished repairing some of the houses and buildings and businesses down here, but also the psychological damage, you know. And like the first two people I grabbed yesterday afternoon, both said they were done and they were going to leave after this, you know, and that wasn't some sort of impromptu bravado thing. That was after a long conversation, because they just can't picture starting over again. They're having these symptoms, anxiety attacks. Their kids just get really upset whenever there's thunder and lightning. And now, you know, you can imagine what the children are dealing with now that they've been flooded out a second time. And, you know, in one case, I was talking to this woman who had been flooded out a second time about her anxiety attacks. And her granddaughter keeps coming up, and I keep pausing. I mean, I don't have to, you know, I can stop what I'm doing and let them deal with family business at a time like this. It's really important. I thought she had to talk. I thought she had something, you know, some emergency she needed to talk to her grandmother about. She just was hovering. She needed to be close to a family member. She just couldn't take being, you know, even 20 feet away.
Well, I tell you what,
kept coming back and forth.
Jay, we're going to talk more about this and continue our special live coverage for another hour. That's Jay Price, WUNC military reporter. This is special coverage of Hurricane Florence from public radio stations around the state. For more information, you can check the website at this public radio station or the website at stateofthings.org. We're going to take a break now, then continue our coverage with more phone calls, more news and information, and your calls. Our coverage continues in a few moments. Stay with us.